If he was able to do this in Texas, the largest state in the union with public school students, it would be monumental as far as impacting other states' ability to put something like this in place. Mm. Other states have vouchers. Not all of them, some of them do. But none of them on the magnitude of Texas.
So other states are watching this.
So if he could do this, it would literally catapult him probably to the top Republican name going into the next Republican election cycle.
Wow.
In 2028. That's why it's so important.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Yolitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey guys, hey. Welcome back to Yolitics. This is one of my favorite places. We haven't been here in a while.
Yeah, we're at the Katy Trail, you know, the place where people walk and do a lot of exercise in Dallas.
And thanks for coming off the trail yourself to join us over here for the podcast.
Yeah, I should
say. Can't tell you wearing shorts underneath this and put on this shirt because you're sweaty.
Yeah, be happy if I had shorts on even. So we're not really at the trail. We're right next to it. We're actually sitting and watching the people exercise while we have beers and some food here.
What do you
have? Some great conversation, too, by the way. I ordered this and then turned around and ordered something else because I didn't know if it was from Texas, and we looked it up,
and it is.
It's called the Rollertown. It's from Rollertown, the big German. They're out of Salina, Rollertown is.
It's
Rollertown Brewing.
Yeah, is it good?
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah.
And they serve it in these enormous, like, frozen goblets here.
Well, at least you have nothing else to do today, so you don't have to worry about that. You can just have one or two of those. I'm having the Pilsner from Meanwhile Brewing Company in Austin.
And
I had to look it up.
What, Austin?
No, Meanwhile Brewing Company.
I'll be enjoying Texas' finest iced tea.
So this is one of the rare occasions where we have three Jasons
on
the podcast.
J3 in the house.
Jason Villalba, you are J3, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, no, I'm actually.
Are you four?
No, my son is the fourth, but he's a George.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
It skipped one generation.
It skipped one.
I'm JV1.
So Jason Villalba, former state rep, Dallas attorney. He's a CEO and chairman of the Texas Hispanic Policy Foundation. That's what he's here for today. He wears a lot of hats. Longtime friend of ours in the podcast. Good to see you again, man.
Man, it's great to be back. This is a wonderful location. We got a little cottonwood coming, country music on the microphones. You guys have the cold beers. I wish I had one, but I got to go back to the office today. So
you got to work today.
I got to work.
We are at work right now.
Funny, so do we. But, you know, whatever.
We're at work right now.
And you know, this is one of the best places to do this. The Katy Trail Ice House, iconic. I guess you call it a patio. You know, it's just this really cool, rustic, laid back. One of the biggest ones, I'd say, in Dallas, where you can be outdoors.
Yes.
And this is the month to do it.
It's a beer garden, pollen falling from the trees. We're in the departure pattern for Southwest Airlines.
Oh, it's late, but it's laid
field.
Back, and there's tables everywhere. People are having a good time.
Thank you.
Having a few drinks. It's just a great place to be this time of year, about the best place in Dallas to relax a little bit.
Although I'm sure that you probably take look around at a crowd like this and you think, man, I could get all opinions from these people on so many different things. You guys have been doing a lot of polling.
You know, we've reached out all across Texas. You know, Dallas is one of our, of course, major urban centers, but our polling is really statewide these days. The Texas Hispanic Policy Foundation was founded to really dig deeply on issues that mattered most to people all around the state. And so we felt like, you know, we would only be a really good barometer of what's happening in the state if we talked to everybody equally. And so I think if you look at our polls, you see the depth that we go. We had 1,600 respondents in our polls. That's a 2.4 MOE, margin of error.
That's a small margin of error for people who don't
know. Very small margin of error. For people that are reading polls out there and they get it from the newspaper, a 2.4 margin of error is really one of the tightest polls you're going to get. Most of them are 3.4, 4%. Ours is really, really well done.
And Jason, explain that a tad more, because, you know, when I post results online, people say, oh, I didn't hear about this poll, if they don't agree with the results. They didn't survey me. They didn't ask me any questions. But usually the thing that I was always kind of told is, if your poll has at least 1,000-plus respondents of likely voters, then it's probably somewhere in the ballpark. Below 1,000, you're probably not doing too well. But you guys have 1,600 on this poll that we're talking about in today's episode. That's a pretty good reach, isn't it?
That's a good sample, but there's more to it than that. Polling, as you know, as a science, is dying. Why? Well, number one, landlines no longer exist. So in the old days, you get a call, on your landline. That's how they determine equally who was in the survey sample. Then we have mobile phones. Well, mobile phones are starting to no longer be the primary means that people communicate, right? Most people get their news now online, through text, on TikTok, wherever. Huh. They're not necessarily getting information from their mobiles. And so you go online. Is that a good way to do it? The key in good polling is not only a strong sample like we have to get that margin of error way down, it's also to make sure that the composition of the sample is representative of what you're trying to test, right?
Huh.
You want as many likely voters in this instance.
Not registered voters, likely voters.
It's a big difference.
Who show up.
But if you're a likely voter, you're already registered.
Yeah. Right? Clearly.
So
yeah.
Registered is a bigger group. Likely voters is a smaller subset of that. But then, as many Republicans or Democrats. Well, how do you determine that? You determine that based on the statistical evidence of the state over the last few cycles. How many men and women in each poll? How many people have Hispanic heritage? How do you do all of that? And how do you blend it together? We asked some of the smartest people in the state at the Policy Foundation. One, our chief analytics officer is Dr. Mark Jones. If you ever read polls and from Houston or wherever, he's at Rice University. He's, he's a PhD, and he's one of the most well-known political survey respondent or creators in all of the state. And so he's our chief analytics officer.
Well, let's get into some meat here, too. But before we, I preface this by saying the Texas Hispanic Policy Foundation isn't just polling Hispanics in this state. You guys are polling everybody, and you have a subset of Hispanic respondents,
it's,
right?
It's a great question, right? So we start with the universe. We start polling just like any other group would poll. But what our secret sauce is that not only do we have a subset, we have a subset that's been plussed up. So most of the times when you see Hispanics being surveyed, they take the full universe, they pull out the Hispanics that were in there, and that's it. That's where they stop. Mm-hmm. What we do is we supplement that subsample so that we have a much larger sample of Hispanics by themselves. That gives us a much more robust sample and a much more accurate sample than any Hispanic information that's out there. And that's really been our calling card, is the accuracy with which we are able to call polls all the way around and then also within Hispanic populations.
So
and
can we start off with
We talked a lot about your polls because they are accurate, and the one I wanted to dive into is vouchers.
Vouchers is a biggie because we're going to hear so much about this several months from
school
now.
Vouchers.
School vouchers. Where, you know, we take public money and put that toward private education for parents who want to pull their kids out of a public school and put them in a private school. You're going to hear a lot about this starting in January of next year, even before then, because a new legislative session is coming up, and there's going to be a real push for this. Governor Abbott has made this pretty much his, you know, I mean, he's known for his stuff along the border. We'll talk about that in a moment. But this seems like the thing that he has campaigned the most on. And what are the numbers telling us when you ask people, do you want what he wants?
You know, that's an excellent question, right? Governor Abbott has made public school vouchers. And let's talk about what that is, right? You're taking public tax dollars and you're using those to supplement and subsidize people who send their children to private schools, right? Mm-hmm. This would be like taking public dollars and giving them to people if they wanted to hire a private security guard.
Right.
It's so it's using that idea as his number one policy issue in Texas. So much so that he campaigned on it and he ran a number of candidates against incumbents if they didn't support him.
He couldn't get it done in several special sessions.
And he was able to knock out a number of incumbents by using resources that he has on these issues.
He knocked out fellow Republicans.
Fellow Republicans, because he cares so much about this issue. Now the question becomes, well, why? Why does he care so much about this issue? I think it's because I think a number of the members of the donor class probably believe that this is a good conservative issue. It's framed as school choice, right? Let the market play out. Let's let the money go with the kid.
Let parents decide.
Let parents decide. All good reasons why good card-carrying members of the TPPF, Texas Public Policy Foundation, think this is a great idea.
They got big money behind them, too.
And lots of large dollars. And so he goes out and says, we're going to make this happen in Texas. Now, let's be clear. If he was able to do this in Texas, the largest state in the union with public school students, it would be monumental as far as impacting other states' ability to put something like this in place. Hmm. Other states have vouchers. Not all of them. Some of them do. Yeah. But none of them on the magnitude of Texas.
So other states are watching this.
So if he could do this, it would literally catapult him probably to the top Republican name going into the next Republican election cycle.
Wow.
So, in 2028. That's why it's so important.
And your the numbers you guys found for school vouchers, where you ask, do you support or oppose legislation that would use tax dollars to provide vouchers to all Texas parents? 57% of people opposed it, 36 supported it. And then when you break down the majority of people in urban areas oppose it, majority of people in suburban areas oppose it, majority of people in rural areas opposed it. 57% to 36% is pretty solid right there.
And this is where the rubber hits the road, and why I said it's confounding to me why this is the issue that the governor's chosen. Because let's just be frank, it's not a winning issue really among any subset of voters. Maybe Republican Party primary voters, but even Republican Party primary voters aren't strongly supportive of this initiative. It's only about 43%.
Yeah.
If you look at rural and urban, now rural is the core of the Republican Party. But think about these districts, right? In these rural counties, just outside of Dallas and outside of the suburbs and outside of the exurbs, the community revolves around these public schools. Mm-hmm. Everything from Friday Night Lights to the band to the local community clubs are all public schools.
We've talked about this, and that's why rural Republicans have been the ones who have killed this over and over from going forward. And you mentioned how the governor supported some of these candidates who knocked off some of these Republican incumbents who wouldn't go along with this. Jason, we saw the ads for a lot of those races. They were focusing on the border. They were focusing on Joe Biden. They were focusing on a lot of things. They were not focusing much, at least the ones I saw, on school vouchers, but that's why the governor was supporting them. He knows what these numbers say.
Oh, certainly.
You think?
The governor is very strong on the border, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but he's not strong on the issue of vouchers. And so when you saw the ads, like you mentioned, all of them talk about, you know, the person he's going against is not supportive on the border. Oh, all of them voted with him on the border, but they wanted to push issues that were impactful to the Republican Party primary voter. They did, but you're right. Why is this such a resounding issue in the office of the governor? That's a question that remains to be seen. I think it's because I do believe that if he's able to do this, he becomes the number one candidate going into the next presidential election cycle in the post-Trump Republican Party.
What happens here with vouchers? If the public's saying we're not for it, does Abbott still really push for this next legislative session?
I think he's made it clear that he is going to continue to push on this issue. It's important to him. It's important to his staff. He's invested a tremendous amount of resources in cobbling together a new legislature of people that support this issue, and he will continue to push.
Does he lose out on something, though, if he gets this passed and you have this many Texans who oppose it?
I think in this legislative cycle, he will push what he pushed last time, right? You know, blanket vouchers all across the board. But I think this time, I think he's willing to compromise. There is a middle ground here, right? And the middle ground is to say, look, let's means test it. If you are a disadvantaged economic parent, and you need resources to send your kids to the best schools, and you make under X number of dollars per year, then we'll supplement your income. But just to say across the board, why does it make sense to give somebody who makes $5 million and sends their kid to the top private schools in the country or the state the same amount of percentage of tuition dollars as somebody who makes $40,000 a year and lives in underperforming school districts? I don't think it does. I think they could make that argument, and I think they could win that argument. When I was in the legislature, I would have always voted against vouchers, but something like that made sense, I could get my head around that. Also, I think special needs. If you have a child who has special needs and they have to go to a special school, I can see where people who are Republicans who have not supported this might vote for this.
But all that was brought up last time, and we've watched this play out before, where it says, oh, let's just do special needs, oh, let's just do people who are up below a certain income. And then Governor Abbott's last proposal was $10,000 across the board to anybody, which is way more than the state gives to public schools now.
Well,
do you think numbers like you guys have pulled here is going to make Abbott back off some of that?
I have no perception that somehow our poll is going to change his mind.
Sure.
But I do believe that if enough people speak, if enough people in the community and the rural areas and even in the urban areas start talking about this issue and how it impacts them, if African Americans and Hispanics overwhelmingly are in opposition of this. It just doesn't make sense politically. Sure, it might be a great feather in the cap for somebody wanting to be the standard bearer for the Republican Party going forward, but not only will it not be a winner at the general election cycle, you could conceivably begin to cut into the muscle of the Republican Party primary voter if you're supporting this. Imagine if you lived in Vidor, Texas, right? Yeah. Your entire community is built around the public school, and your state rep comes home and says, guess what? I'm going to allow a percentage of every dollar that goes to your kid to go to some kid in Dallas, Texas, to St. Mark's High School. That's not a winner. That's not a winning proposition for that state rep, and that state rep is going to stand strong. I mean, you saw a number of state reps say, look, we'd love to help out, and if you can give us something that's common sense, we'll be there for you. But the Stan Lamberts of the world, you know, the Hugh Shines of the world who was taken out, you know, they stood firm on this. And I can't imagine even these new members, when they get elected with the support of the governor on these kinds of issues, are going to be any more comfortable voting against their hometown than they are now.
I want to get to the border, where the governor does a lot better. But first, let me ask you one more question on vouchers, just because this is such a big deal. The governor has made this such a top priority. You hear from people. I mean, you're connected. You've been in the legislature. You know, what are Republicans saying about this? I would think that this item in your poll would be the one that Republicans might be buzzing the most about in the ruling class.
I mean, I won't mention any names, but okay. I've talked to any number of Republicans who were just recently in an election cycle, in a primary. Not a single one of them said, wow, you know what's a great idea for my community? Vouchers. I'm really in favor of this, and I want to go full bore on this. None of them said that. Now, most of them did say, gosh, I mean, I got headwinds against me, and I got this uphill climb that there are millions of dollars being contributed to my opponent because of this issue. You know, I can live to fight another day and just toe the party line, or I can, you know, face this uphill climb and these headwinds and maybe lose. And so that's why I think you saw a number of folks either be quiet on it or if they pushed back very timidly and not strongly. The ones that did push back strongly and got out there were immediately primaried, and many of them lost their seats. So it's a real threat, and it's really an issue that is impacting the quality of candidates that are running, because we lost some really good members. Yeah. In this last cycle,
and once we're lost, look at these poll numbers and go, ha, told you so.
But here's what I would suggest to them, if they're listening. I would suggest to them, damned if you do, damned if you don't. If I'm going to lose, I want the people at home to send me home. I don't want to lose because a lot of dollars from PACs that were people that are not in the state came against me, you know? Mm-hmm. I want to be with my community. I want to be with what my neighbors say and what the people I sit in the church pew say about these issues. And if they send me home, so be it. Yeah. But I don't want to have to lose to the other side.
Yeah, you'll see them at the store. Let's get into the border here. So if Texans that you polled do not like school vouchers, they do certainly like what Governor Abbott is doing on the border. The amount of money that's being spent down there, the busing asylum seekers to northern cities, his whole handling of the border. One thing really stuck out to me, though, in this, the SB 4, Senate Bill 4, the recent Texas legislation that makes illegal immigration a state crime. That's supported by 58% of likely voters. It's opposed by 40% of likely voters. The courts are considering the constitutionality of this. Does any of those numbers surprise you there?
You know, it's interesting. The conventional wisdom on this, if you listen to the national media and really some of the vocal pundits, right, around the areas are saying, you know, this is a loser, this is bad, everyone's against this, even Hispanics don't like it. But our numbers tell us something different. Our numbers tell us that on this issue, border security, right, Governor Abbott has his thumb squarely on the pulse of what people want. Right. And when you see Hispanics, you know, people from the Rio Grande Valley to the Panhandle and all across Texas supportive of these kinds of initiatives, and our numbers say that they do, that tells you that this issue is impactful and is a winner for the governor. And I think he's done a really courageous job of following this, because much like vouchers, which, you know, he heard a lot about this in the session and still went after it, and it turns out that they're still not supportive of it. But he heard a lot of bad things on this one as well, stuck with it, and sure enough, it's going to be a winner for him. It's probably one of the main reasons that he's one of the most popular governors in the country right now. And if you look at his numbers vis-a-vis Biden, Biden's numbers are in there too on these issues. You know, Biden's at 24%, right?
Yeah, so, that was a question you asked.
Whether we asked, so who's doing, is he doing a good job on border security?
Yeah. Is Biden doing a good job?
Right. Is Abbott doing a good job on border security? Overwhelmingly positive. Is Biden doing a good job on border security? Overwhelmingly not positive, right? Yeah. And so you compare and contrast those. I mean, I think, you know, Abbott's very clever. He's a very astute politician. He knows the issues that will drive the needle. That's why I was so confused about the voucher issue for many years.
Does he really know the issues that will drive the needle if he's gotten the vouchers wrong on this?
Well, that's why I said it's confounding, right? Because on this one, he's
there
squarely in the, not only in the fairway, he is winning. He is winning on this issue. And like you said, it's not just doing well on border security. It's $3.5 billion that he spent.
Yeah.
It's SB4 saying we're going to make it a state crime to be in the country or in Texas illegally.
It's busing.
It's busing. Yeah. Busing immigrants. And all across the board, Hispanics and Anglos and African-Americans supportive on most of these issues, right? Mm. And so he knows he can win on those issues. And let's be clear, too. If you look at the big picture issues, right, and you ask people, what are the most important issues to you going forward? On the Republican side, right now it's overwhelmingly border security.
Yeah.
School choice, a very distant 10th, 11th, 12th.
Wow.
Why? Because most people aren't dealing with those kinds of issues. But border security, I mean, they're hearing about that every single day when they tune into Fox News and Newsmax.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, though, that, you know, this breaks a lot by party, of course, when you start talking about these border issues. But on every single one of these, as you just ticked off, the majority, and that's including Republicans, Independents, and Democrats, the majority is with the governor on the busing, on making it a state crime to enter the country.
Democrats
illegally.
We see fall below.
Right.
We see fall below the majority line. But if you look at all voters, and then you look at Hispanics and African Americans, you're still strongly supportive of these kinds of initiatives to keep our border safe.
So we're likely to see more of that.
Unquestionably. Yep. It will be a big issue. You know, I don't know how much more they can do, but I can definitely see why they continue to make this a priority issue for Governor Abbott, and then also the legislature is supportive of these kinds of initiatives because they're winners. Mm-hmm. They're winners.
But they could spend more money down there. They could take over other city parks up and down the Rio Grande, couldn't they?
Well, you could do those kinds of things, but when you spend $3.5 billion and you have a state that froze over when there was a big ice storm and you need infrastructure for electricity and roads, you know, how much more can you spend, right? I mean, there are plenty of other items where if I were the governor, and I'm not, if I were the governor, not only could he have a winner on this issue, there are other areas where he could bring together not only Republicans but independent-minded voters and win on some issues like infrastructure, like electricity grid, like, you know, the kinds of things that ordinary Texans are interested in.
Yeah, it sounds like you're saying, look out, Governor, for that, you know, possible success trap down there on the border. You know, you've got it pretty good right now. You go spending too much more there, and then the power goes off again. You might find yourself in dire straits.
And there's always those kinds of issues that pop up. School security is a good example, right? I mean, Uvalde comes up out of nowhere, and, you know, all of a sudden our schools aren't safe.
Right.
That becomes problematic, you know, and the people that send their kids to private or to public schools, you know, we worry about that. I've got three kids, and so that's got to be an issue that they shore up, and he's done, a good job on that issue. The only issue where he's gotten out of alignment with the popularity of the issue is on the school voucher issue.
Well, let's talk about another big issue, abortion. That's a question you asked about, an issue you asked about. And the likely voter preference among four potential policies, more than half of the people you guys asked said that they would support abortion. They would prefer abortion be legal through at least 12 weeks of pregnancy. Mm-hmm. State law right now, if you don't know, the heartbeat bill passed. It's until a fetal heartbeat is detected. After that, you cannot perform an abortion. That's usually about 6 weeks into pregnancy. Mm-hmm. A smaller number, I think, 44% said that they only prefer abortion to be illegal unless a woman's life is at risk. So this is out of alignment a little bit here with a lot of Republicans, not just Governor Abbott.
Well, this is an issue we're seeing resonate all over the country, most recently in Arizona. Arizona, as you know, their Supreme Court just said that there's a law from 1864 essentially prohibiting abortion in all instances except for risk to the mother's life.
Right.
And that became law. You know, Republicans or Democrats tried to change it. The Republicans said no, and it's become a huge issue and frankly a political loser going into November when it's going to be on the ballot. In Texas, to compare and contrast Texas with Arizona, in Texas, only 15%, that means 85% of other people feel differently, only 15% of approve of an abortion prohibition like that of Arizona.
Yeah.
So only 15% of the voters would agree to have something like they have in Arizona. Now, what does that tell you? That tells you that there is no segment, Republican or Democrat, that's going to be in favor of that kind of prohibition. So when the legislature comes back, I guarantee you there will be an Arizona-style prohibition on abortion. And I guarantee you most Republicans will likely support it. Why? Because all of the PACs will tell them that if they don't do that, then they will be opposed by that PAC. So the Texas Right to Life and the Alliance for Life will all line up against that. But that becomes a very big issue in subsequent legislative cycles because that's just a bridge too far, right? And that's what we're seeing now in other states where these issues are on the ballot. These Republicans that are voting in favor of these blanket prohibitions are getting kicked out.
So wait, you're saying here, though, that your numbers are showing that voters do not want that kind of prohibition by and large, but that when we get to the next legislative session, we're going to see a prohibition like that brought up, and that a majority of Republicans will vote for it? Do you think it passes?
It'll be filed on the first day. If not, the first day of filing, you'll see that bill being filed. And I'm almost certain that given the composition of the legislature, that it will pass in some form.
Well, what does this mean to, before we even get to the legislature, what does this mean for November if you have a number of people? We saw what happened in Kansas. We've seen what's happened in other states when abortion is actually on the ballot. It's not going to be on the ballot in Texas per se, but individuals who support abortion will be on the ballot. Do these numbers impact anyone?
The Republican Party, the Republican Party in Texas will keep it low profile. It won't be an issue that they campaign on. Any Republican candidate will not make it a big issue, but I guarantee you every Democrat candidate will make it the number one issue going into November. Now, will it be enough? That remains to be seen, right? I don't think it will be, because I think most Republicans will frame it as, look, we're just protecting the life of the baby,
yeah.
You know, and like the classic argument that we always have. But I guarantee you, every Democrat running against a Republican in the fall will have this as the number one issue on their election cards and any other issue they have on television. It will be the number one issue.
To reiterate what Jason said, though, you think that this will be filed on day one. I can easily see it being filed. You think this will pass the legislature given the new composition in the House of Representatives?
I do.
You think so?
I do.
So Texas abortion restrictions, you think, will likely get even tighter next year.
They're pretty tight now, right, with the heartbeat bill. But I think they will be tighter next cycle.
Is this a case where Republicans here in Texas don't want to be one-upped? You know, whether it be, you know, Florida, it's usually the battle between Texas and Florida. In this case, it would be Arizona, that they don't want there to be another state, you know, in Arizona, an Idaho, that has something more restrictive than what Texas has?
I think that's a big part of it, but I really think the issue is a concern that the major name political action committees, Texas Right to Life and Texas Alliance for Life, will be in opposition to anyone who doesn't support this bill.
So it's not necessarily the issue, it's will I lose total support if I don't?
From the Right to Life. And let me just tell you, having been in the crosshairs of those groups, now remember, I had an A-plus rating from the Texas Right to Life, but I supported one issue. I supported an exception for severe fetal abnormality, meaning we know the baby is going to be born with an abnormality that will likely result in its death within 6 hours.
Yeah.
I voted for that exception. And for that, there were 5 flyers placed in the mail against me. I was called a baby killer, and I lost any support that I had from the community that called themselves pro-life. And so even though I was an A+, because of this one tiny exception, I'm now a baby killer.
And right? For other Republican leaders in this state, you were another cautionary tale.
And remember, I lost. I lost my election. Now, there were other reasons that I lost beyond just that one issue. But make no mistake, the pro-life lobby and the pro-life community is very strong in Republican Party primaries. I lost in a primary, and it was the primary voters that said, well, Villalba's not pro-life enough for us. This candidate over here is more pro-life than Jason is because of this one exception.
Wow.
And that's why I think the bill will pass.
So the last two things we want to talk about here are the horse races, we call, the actual candidates, not the issues. This survey that was done April 5th through April the 10th, the 1,600 people you guys questioned, the likely voters, showed that President Trump leads President Biden, former President Trump leads President Biden by 12% in this state. For those who won't keep score, Trump only beat Biden in Texas by 6% 4 years ago. Looks like Trump's getting more popular in Texas despite the criminal cases against him, despite January 6th and everything else.
Well, two things. I'm not certain it's because Trump is moving up. I think it's more a function of Biden, who did not have a record last time, moving down. He has a record now. We know what Joe Biden is about. I think voters who have not found him to be the president they want find him to be somewhat tired, right? Or maybe not as strong on fiscal policy issues or any number of ways that he's been characterized by the right. And so his popularity went down, whereas Trump stayed roughly the same. The second issue I would say is this poll was taken before what we're seeing happen unfold in New York right now.
We also haven't seen many ads for president here in this state yet, but we've seen a lot of negative Joe Biden ads in the primaries for even local races. And so, there's a hill to climb up there.
And it's early, right? I mean, we're talking about April timeframe. Yeah. I mean, we don't really see these needles moving until September timeframe, September, October. So I think it'll tighten up. I think Trump still wins Texas, make no mistake, but I don't think the 12 points is probably where we're going to land. It's probably more like 6, 7, 8 like we saw last time.
So considering the Trump race here, the other fascinating part of your poll shows Ted Cruz 5 points ahead of Colin Allred. So Trump's at 12 points ahead. Cruz is at 5 points ahead. He's underperforming what Trump's doing. And then you see Colin Allred, the Democratic nominee running against Cruz, he's doing better than Joe Biden, so he's overperforming here.
Yeah, this
is going to be another tight race, it looks like, right now.
You've characterized it correctly, right? I think Cruz has underperformed the base. Cruz is not a well-loved candidate around the state. He's our Republican, right? He's a conservative that people know is truly conservative, but he's just not embraced by the wide community at large, right, for a number of reasons. On the other side, Allred is an unknown commodity. Just like Biden had the benefit of the doubt in the last election cycle, I think Colin Allred has the benefit of the doubt going into this cycle, so he's overperforming. Remember, he's tall, he's a Baylor graduate, he's a football player, played in the NFL, he's been a moderate Democrat. All those things mitigate that he's going to do much better than most Democrats would do. I think he's going to do better than Beto in this race. I think he's going to get closer to the waterline than Beto.
That was a tight race. That was what?
It was like two and a half points.
You think this will be closer than the Beto race?
I think it's going to be closer than the Beto race, and I think that Colin Allred actually has a chance to win it.
Wow.
And here's why.
Wait. What's the margin of error again?
Well, right now he's 5 points up. My margin of error is 2 point, or the margin of error of the poll is 2.4.
So it's almost dead heat. But if you take margin of error, it's
early. You know, Cruz is going to hit Allred, right? And Allred, some of his negatives will start to show up. But the reason I think that he actually has a puncher's chance in this race is because I really do believe that being a moderate Democrat, you know, being supportive of the kinds of things that moderate Democrats historically have been supportive of, like lowering our taxes, stronger on crime and those kinds of issues. And the fact that he was in the NFL, right? And he looks the part, right? He's just a strong, tall, handsome, charismatic kind of guy. I think that gives him a real strength vis-a-vis Cruz, who we kind of know is maybe not as the strong candidate that, say, Trump would be, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think he's got a little bit of that, that little unspoken kind of characteristics. And then also, I think the women issue is going to be big. I think if you're Cruz and you're talking about a complete ban on abortion in Texas from 0 days from the very beginning, and you've got all we're talking about 12 to 24 months.
We talked 24 weeks.
Or 24 weeks. 24 weeks. I think our numbers suggest that that's going to be a resonant issue for suburban moms, exurban moms, and even rural moms.
Wow. Does the Trump campaign even start to have a look at this race here? Because, you know, this is right up there near the top of the ballot. You know, if Allred is overperforming that well and Cruz is underperforming so much, does a Trump campaign worry a little bit about any spillover effect from that?
I don't think so. And the reason is, if you look statistically at these kinds of races in a presidential year, it's always top down.
The other way around, yeah.
It's always top down. The presidential cycle will always have some impact on the lower races, but lower races almost never have a statewide impact. They might have an impact in places like Dallas,
yeah,
where Colin is well known, or Houston, where Cruz is well known. Yeah. But they probably won't have a statewide impact for Trump.
And so it might be reverse of that then. Trump might have to save Cruz a little bit.
And Trump may certainly give some win to the sales of Cruz. Now, again, this all depends on what happens in this cycle up in New York, where, you know, look, we've seen some bad press come out of this.
Yeah.
And if he loses and is convicted, you know, how does that impact all of these races down ballot? Now, if he's convicted, does he go to prison? I don't think so. I think he gets a fine and probation. But he's a convicted felon at that point. So does that have an impact on these down-ballot races? We won't know for a while. We'll test this again in September, and we'll have a much better read in August timeframe about what it looks like.
So you could actually be asking that question in several months from now. You know, does a felony, a conviction, does that change how you feel?
Well, our polling will show it, right? Because he by that time he will either have been convicted or have been acquitted or a hung jury.
Yeah.
So we'll have a good feel for what it looks like, and that'll tell us.
Can we believe polls this time around?
I think the answer is you always have to give polls, look at them as a snapshot from 30,000 foot. Think of it like the U-2 spy plane, right? The U-2 spy plane goes over, they see something down there. It's very likely that it could be missiles, it could be fakes, like in World War II, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it does give you an indication of whether or not there are trend lines developing. I think polls this early are indicative of where we are, right? But by no means are these the final numbers. Now, in August, when we come back and we're starting to nail it down, I'll start laying some bets out for you about how close we get.
We're going to be inside here at the Katy Trail Ice House in August, though.
We got within half a point.
It'll be
in the last election cycle.
With your poll. With our
poll. So we were the closest in Texas.
Wow.
On the last one. So we're hopeful that our next poll in August will be just as close.
This is a flag in the ground right now. It's a snapshot, as you say, of the minds where people are right now. But before we let you go, on Wednesday, you have a new element coming out that people should watch for. This one's about gaming. Give us a 10-cent preview of what to expect here. This is the final element of your poll.
This is important for Dallas. I mean, if you're listening somewhere around, and maybe San Antonio or Houston, important for you as well. But one of the issues that's really been important in the legislature is whether or not we allow casino gambling. And by casino gambling, I don't mean like a reservation casino. I mean a high-end hotel destination resort-style casino. You know, the top of the top end in Las Vegas, like the Wynn or the Bellagio, right?
Not far from here, Mark Cuban, owner or co-owner of the Dallas Mavericks, is really pushing for this.
Yeah, we're seeing it. Well, he doesn't own anymore, right?
Right.
It's owned by the Adelsons, who also own the Bellagio.
Right.
Or the Venetian. So
did they see something?
The reason they bought so much land in Dallas and they bought so much land in Irving is because they're hopeful that the legislature makes the move this cycle to do it. I think it's very possible. Our numbers, I'll tell you just as a preview, look like they are going to be the public's for it. We know that. Now, in other kinds of gambling, online gambling or gambling at a sports arena, less support. But destination casino is very strong across the board, including with evangelicals.
Which
has always been sort of the stopgap from before.
So in this next legislature, we could have stricter abortion restrictions. may or may not have school vouchers, depending on what happens. But you think there is a chance that casino gambling could get passed?
I was talking to Scott Braddock, sort of the godfather of Austin, about this morning, and he heard about some of our numbers. And he said, right. So everyone's supportive of it. Everyone likes it. Everyone's in favor of it, but it doesn't pass again. Hmm. I mean, remember, this has been in the legislature for at least 10 years since Senator Corona was a senator here. And we've tried over and over and over to get something like this over the finish line. It hasn't. I believe what might be different this time is the amount of resources you're going to see poured into this effort by the Adelson family in Texas. They would not have bought, the Mavericks and spent hundreds of millions of dollars if they didn't anticipate this was going to happen at some point in time. They are very astute business people that would not take that kind of risk. So I think something will happen. Whether or not it ends up being destination resort, who knows? We'll find out. But it's certainly something to watch.
It's interesting, though, because we've got two issues in this poll, or in these two polls, one of them gambling, the other school vouchers, that over and over and over again have failed. Both of them likely to come to the fore again. We'll see if either or both make it through.
Well, 2 years ago at this time, we were having conversations about vouchers, right? The governor had gone out and campaigned for a number of people, but that time he didn't put money. He just showed up at events. And he got a lot of folks to say, I'm going to give it a real thoughtful evaluation. I'm a maybe on that. And then they went into the legislature with a head of steam. I remember all the folks talking about how this is a cycle where we're gonna see something pass. And slowly but surely, over that 180 days or 140 days, it was gone.
They started hearing from constituents.
Yeah.
And I'd remind you, too, about open carry. Everyone thought that was dead as a doornail. That would never pass in this state. And, 4 years ago, that passed.
One Saturday afternoon. They call it Gun Saturday, and it passes.
All right. Wow. Jason Villalba, the CEO, chairman of the board, Texas Hispanic Policy Foundation. Longtime listener, first-time caller of the Yellow Ticks podcast. Always good to see you, man.
Great to be here, man. Thanks.
That is great.
Thanks so much.
We'll have to do this again when you follow up in August.
I'm looking forward to
it. But again, inside, not outside.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Click subscribe and get Yellow Ticks every week. Yellow Ticks, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.